This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Natalie McLean. How are you, Natalie?
I'm great, Chris. Great to be back with you again.
Excellent, excellent. We're recording this over Zoom for my second time now, and I was quite impressed with the sound quality on the first one, so hopefully everything will be all good on this one.
Terrific. Well, the tech gods are with us. You never know these days yeah. with everybody online, but we're doing well.
Yeah, no, that's good. So we talked last week a bit about yourself and the different products you have, because you do wine courses, you've got a podcast, you do online, you do a free online wine tasting on Facebook regularly, every second Wednesday, did you
every
say?
Second Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern, that's right. We gather and we have a lot of fun.
I heard it was so that it was on a Wednesday, so you could use the hashtag Wine Wednesday.
That's right, or Wednesday Winos, whichever you prefer.
Oh, is it? Is it Wednesday Winos? I'll have to get Jane.
The group named itself.
Fair enough. What I want to talk to you today about is more about food and wine matching, because a lot of the communication you have is about food and wine matching. I think you've got an offer for our listeners that can download one of your guides on food and wine matching.
That's right. I've got a guide called the Ultimate Food and Wine Pairing Guide, and they can find it at nataliemclean.com/UK wine.
That's for us, is it, UK wine? So you can track who
it is. Oh, yes.
Yeah. Cool.
Just for your listeners.
Just UK wine, nataliemclean.com/UK wine. So food and wine matching, there's lots of different philosophies. I've spoken to quite a few different people about food and wine matching over the years. I've sort of come across one I quite like, but I'd like to just hear about where you come from a food and wine matching sort of perspective.
Sure. First of all, I think you pair wine to the diner, not the dinner. Somebody famous said that, not me. But what that means, and it really aligns with my philosophy, is that drink the wines you love. Follow some guidelines about food and wine pairing. They're never strict rules. And experiment. Have fun with it. See what happens. And trust your own palate. Like, calibrate. Go back and forth. And I think you'll be amazed at what you can discover. That I think the pleasure of wine can be exponentially better when you're pairing it with food. To me, I liken it to listening to a beautiful, you know, cello concerto. That's lovely. But when you have the whole orchestra and they're in harmony, you have just so much more nuance, complexity, pleasure, diversity. And that for me is the pleasure of food and wine. So that's kind of the really macro view of how I view wine and food pairing.
Okay. So it seems to be more of an experimental point of view, allowing people to make their own selections with a bit of guidance, is it?
Exactly. So that's my starting point when I teach my online food and wine pairing courses. I always try to say, okay, there's no one perfect wine for every dish, because people get caught up in that. They get, you know, a little bit nervous or hung up on it, or they don't want to experiment, or that keeps them in the rut of always having the same wine with the same dish. So we need to get past that first. And then beyond that, it is about experimenting. And, you know, some of the things I do in my classes are, we'll start with the wine as a baseline. So taste the wine that we have in front of us, whether it's a red or a white, and then try a squeeze of lemon, and then go back to your wine. And what's happened to your perception of the taste of the wine? It's pretty profound how it will change. I mean, you can do that with like a piece of cheese, a dash of salt, anything. But it starts to isolate how these flavor compounds are working together. And then people think, oh, wow, that's really different. And they start to think in terms of experimenting with different flavor components. So if there's a squeeze of lemon on my sole, my fish dish, maybe a Sauvignon Blanc would be better because it tastes better than, you know, a Cabernet, which is probably going to clash.
You're not that far away from the way I sort of look at it as well, that there's some things in the food and things in the wine that interact, you know, Sauvignon Blanc, the acidity in the fish on the fish desensitizes your acidity, so you don't notice the acidity in the Sauvignon Blanc, so and vice versa. So they sort of counteract each other a little bit, and they hide the acidity, so to speak. So there's different interactions, and you're saying let people crack on with it. Are you do you think that, because I always think people's choices are nature nurture, you know, some is genetic, but some of it's just personality, you know, whether someone likes something. I'll give you the example I did was quite often when I first got into the wine trade, you'd hear about food and wine matching being about complementing food and making it all sort of, you know, if you've got, I don't know, the classic one is, you know, something's hot and spicy, then you have something a little bit sweet because sugar takes the edge off the heat. And that's a thing, common sort of approach. And I've always thought of that as the French approach, you know, everything's sort of in complementary to it. And then I went to Hong Kong a few years ago and, you know, people were drinking big cab salves with sweet dishes and all hot, spicy food with cab salves. And you're sitting there going, what are you doing? What are you doing? And they're like, well, if I ordered something hot and spicy, I don't want to drink something sweet and lose the hot and spicy. I order something hot and spicy because I want something hot and spicy. So let's big that up.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, that's a great approach.
It's complete different opposite approach. But, you know, you're using the same rules, but you land up approaching it from a completely different direction and landing up with a completely different, the opposite answer. Do you know what I mean? And neither's right or wrong. It's just that they're opposites.
I like that. I like that because that still is aligned with the overall philosophy of drink what you like and go for your own pleasure. So if you want to amp up the spice and the heat, pour flames on that, or pour fuel on that flame.
It is just diesel,
right? With your Cabernet. Exactly. I like that. You know what? You've opened my eyes to that too, because, you know, I personally wouldn't do it doesn't mean it wouldn't be amazing, a great experience for someone else who wants, you know, that full-on hot chili flavor.
Yeah, it's not my type of thing either, but I was quite surprised by that when I heard that, you know. And I was thinking, you know, did quite often when we think a food and a wine match is a classic match, someone could very easily say I prefer the opposite of that. And you can, and I started running arguments in my mind after that, and there's almost every classic match you can run the opposite argument if you wanted to.
Yeah. You could. And I like your nurture versus nature because, you know, for me personally, having been tested and found to be a super taster, there are a lot of combinations I don't like because they're bitter. Mm. But lots of people love the bitter compound. It's why bitters became popular as a digestif after dinner. But I will steer away from those. And I do try to keep that in mind in my pairing courses that, you know, my personal taste isn't for everyone. Everyone finds pleasure in different ways. And so, but I love your example. I'm going to keep that in mind from now on for sure.
Yeah, no, I was quite surprised as well. You're about to release a new, one of your video series on pairing of cheese and wine. Is that right?
Right. So my primary course, not yet, it's coming. So it's a deep dive into 50 different types of cheeses and pairing them with wine. So perhaps if someone's listening to this in the future, it'll be available. But, you know, if folks want to know, they can just come on over to my website and they'll know when the courses are available. Right now, it's the Get Wine Smart course, which is very focused on food and wine pairing.
Oh, is it? So it's one of the big focuses because you do a lot of food and wine. Is that what a lot of people are really interested in with your products?
It is. I think it's a great starting point, a non-intimidating starting point for a lot of people, because I think more people love food and feel confident about food and cooking than they do about wine. So I get a lot of foodies coming to my site because we have recipes and food and wine pairing tools on the site. And from that, they start experimenting with wine. Now, I also have lots of very big winos, wine knowledgeable people. It's not just novices, but I find that they meet, whether you're really knowledgeable about food or really knowledgeable about wine, you meet in the middle with food and wine pairing. And I think that's where the fun is. That's, you know, the chemistry and all the combinations and the way that we provide more pleasure for ourselves, but also the way we entertain our friends. And people are looking for that, for new ideas and ways to get out of their rut. And at least right now during COVID, it's something that they can do at home in the absence of being able to go to restaurants. And they're quite enjoying it.
Yeah, no, that's true, actually. You get to play with it yourself and work it all out. What's your favorite pairing at the moment? Is there anything that surprised you in the last few months that you've gone, wow, wish I'd known that before?
So I've been snacking quite a bit. I'm going to have to change that.
Oh my God.
Coming out of COVID.
I do. I normally race triathlons. I haven't done really any training for 6 months. I hopped on the scales yesterday. It's like, wow. They call it the Heathrow injection when a Kiwis arrive in the UK because you just get fat. And I put on 10 kilos. So it's brilliant.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I think we're all going to have to deal with that. So, but that's for later when the lockdown's over. So I've been experimenting. Trying different little snacks, and I've discovered a brilliant pairing of Cracker Jacks. Do you have those caramelized popcorn in the UK?
Oh, no, but you can buy caramelized. Is it just caramelized popcorn?
Or candy corn.
Yeah.
Oh, candy corn, or whatever you want to call it.
I love that. We don't call it Cracker Jacks, but it's just that. It's nice.
Exactly. Yeah, and I've been pairing that with an oak chardonnay. And
oh, really?
It is the bomb. It is so good.
Because I would have just gone sauterne straight away for that.
Yeah, that's true. There's quite a bit of sweetness. But if you get an oak chardonnay, especially maybe from California, that has a bit of sweetness in it because of the oak, like you perceive sweetness.
Yeah.
With the Cracker Jacks, it's just great. And, you know, I still look for the little prize in the Cracker Jack box. That's going back to childhood. So it's like bringing me right back to those early comforting memories, but this time with wine.
Okay, and what sort of ripe, where are you getting the Chardonnay from? Is it quite a ripe profile?
It is quite a ripe Chardonnay, so it would be like either a Napa or Sonoma Chardonnay.
Yeah. Or Australian
exactly. Australian will do the trick too.
Yeah. Okay, so a nice big ripe Chardonnay. Okay, I know one from Argentina that might go quite well. Well, I've got my daughter, we sometimes buy that, but my daughter's got this amazing recipe of salt and just sugar, basically, and fat, and she pours it all over popcorn, so I might try it.
That's great. I love that recipe. I must get it.
Oh, it's lethal. It must have about a zillion calories in it, but it makes the popcorn so nice. And I don't think it's quite as good as the Cracker Jacks, but for being able to whip it up, it's not too bad.
It sounds fun.
Okay, Cracker Jacks. Okay, not too bad. And what's the thing that you find your students have the most difficulty with food and wine matching?
Difficulty describing what they're smelling in wine. So taking the aromas, because inevitably people will say, well, this just smells like wine to me. Mm. And that's where a lot of people start.
Well, but some are more sophisticated. They do say white wine or red wine sometimes. And
sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. There's a step up, graduating. But just getting them to be more aware of the aromas in their lives. So developing an aroma vocabulary, because we don't use it a lot. I mean, we're a very visual culture. We have movies and Netflix and all the rest of it, but we don't pay attention to smell as much as we did, you know, back when it was life or death, you know, where the berries could kill the children or whatever. I'm talking cave days. So what I do is ask my students to really pay attention to the aromas in their lives. So when you first cut open fruit or vegetables, take a sniff there then, because that's when they're most pungent. Smell the cinnamon on your toast. You know, smell the leather of your old armchair. Just don't let anybody see you doing it, because they'll wonder what the heck you're up to. But just take a moment to literally smell the roses or anything else in your life, and you'll start to develop that aroma vocabulary. And it won't be so hard as you're tasting wine to start to get a sense of what's coming through the wine to you. And of course, side by side tasting, then it's the differences in aromas start to leap out at people. So a lot of side by side tasting as well. And that's for the sort of the beginning students that I teach. But you know, I also teach intermediate and up to advanced. And we're trying to get a little bit more nuanced then with the different, what kind of flowers is it?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That sort of thing, and going along the spectrum. Because I think once you can start isolating aromas, and by extension flavors, that ties right into food and wine pairing. Because everyone has quite a bit of ease with identifying flavors in a roast chicken, but that Chardonnay, and where do those flavors intersect or clash, or, you know, contrast to your point, because that could be what you're going for.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's where it starts.
I can see that. A lot of people do have problems with smells. They are a particularly tricky thing for a lot of people to grasp. And even myself, you know, every now and then, because the thing about smell is it's tied into some of the earliest parts of our brain. So it's a very old sense in terms of things. And it does have weird connections to memory and all sorts of crazy things. So it is a really great thing to play with once you get the hang of it. And people who don't really smell things are really missing out on all sorts of layers of intrigue in their own mind, really.
That's right. And that's why, you know, Cracker Jacks takes me back to childhood. And that's why Proust starts a remembrance of things past or time past with eating the Madeleine. It's not even the flavors of the Madeleine, it's the smell that's taking us right back. Because as you say, Chris, smell is the only part or the only one of our five senses that ties directly to memory in the brain and emotion. And it's very powerful. And so, you know, I smell some magazines and I'm right back in my grandfather's porch, you know. So it's very evocative. And if people can learn to just pay attention to the aromas and smells around them, they'll be surprised, not just at what they get out of wine, but what they get out of life, because the memories will come back, where they were, who they were with, all tied to that smell, place, time, and memory.
Yeah, no, that's very good. That's very good. I might have to spend a bit more time training people on their smells, because it is quite a fun thing. You know, people quite enjoy learning how to be able to smell things, and a lot of people do struggle. When we teach in classes, you know, I normally use those Nez Divan kits, not because they're particularly accurate, but they give you a reference point to discuss. You know, so, you know, I've gotten numerous of those aroma bar kits and Nez Divan and all sorts of stuff, and they're all slightly different. Yeah, you know, like a cherry is different here to a cherry over there, but at least you're discussing something in the ballpark, and it allows you to have a decent discussion. So maybe I need to spend a bit more time thinking about how to help people with that. Good thoughts.
good.
What's your favorite wine and food pairing, actually, before we let you go?
Depends on who I'm with and where I am, but generally I love Pinot Noir from cool climate regions like here in Canada or Germany, or of course Burgundy if I can afford it, or a cool climate of like Carneros in California. Even New Zealand is lovely. And then with that, I mean, it's just so diverse, the food pairings. But right now, because of the times we're in, I'm loving comfort food. So a nice roast chicken with herbs and maybe some spring potatoes would be just the ticket.
Lovely. Sounds very nice. It's just the weather's still about right. We're still having roasts on Sundays, but we're not, we're just starting to lighten them up a little bit, because the weather's been really nice in the UK for the last couple of months. Since
that's
lockdown.
Great.
Okay, Natalie, I think that pretty much wraps it up. Just before we go, though, we've done your favorite food pairing, but we've also, you mentioned at the beginning of the podcast about your food guide. How do people access that again?
Sure. It's at nataliemclean.com/UK wine after your podcast there, Chris. And it's my ultimate food and wine guide, pairing guide. It has lots and lots of suggestions. They can get it at that link.
Perfect. All right. Cheers very much, Natalie.
Okay. Cheers.